You may be seated. All right, our next case, 11-215 In Re MW for the appellant. I guess Ms. Powell's going first.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, Mr. Van, I would like to reserve 3 minutes, if I may, and I also will be sharing time today with amicus from the National Juvenile Defender Center, Nadia Sirotan. More than 60 years ago, in Haley versus Ohio, the United States Supreme Court recognized that a child in interrogation is an easy victim of the law. Since then, research has shown that 80% of children do not understand all of the Miranda warnings, and only 45% of children understand even one of the four aspects of Miranda. Now, children aren't expected to care for themselves generally. They need adults to guide and protect them. Children can't walk into a CVS and get a flu shot without a parent. Why, then, would we allow a child to proceed through an interrogation without guidance from a parent or an attorney? Current law recognizes that children are different and need special protections, and this notion has been recognized recently in three United States Supreme Court decisions, Roper v. Simmons, Graham v. Florida, and recently JDB versus North Carolina. And Ohio law recognizes this fact as well. Specifically, Ohio's Juvenile Right to Counsel statute and this court's decision in In Re CS provide that child a layer of protection before waiving counsel in court.
Counsel, most of the arguments that I saw in the briefs and your amicus briefs all deal with really a policy decision. There does not seem to be any constitutional requirement or law that this happen. This seems to be a very good policy decision. Has there been any attempt to take this to the legislature to ask for them to create this right?
Well, in the recent wave of legislation, this fight is sort of ongoing with the legislature. That's fair. However, I think that there is more of a constitutional hook now than there ever has been, and that does come from the June decision from the United States Supreme Court. In JDB, the court there recognized in a custodial interrogation, well, in an interrogation setting.
But that's the distinction, that's custodial, and then you also have the protections for that child at the hearing stage where the court can look at the circumstances of the interrogation and decide if the child had appropriate protections or not, or the child was coerced. You always have that look back that gives the child the protection without creating an upfront right that doesn't exist now.
I think it does exist now, and where it exists, again, not only from constitutional law at this point, but also in the statute. And the statute does provide a right to counsel that's broader than it was before. In 1969, the legislature changed the law, broadened the law. At the first time, the legislature recognized the child's right while in custody.
And you're trying to make a initial interview with the child a proceeding. That's how you get to your position.
Well, you just put the emphasis on the word proceeding, and I prefer the emphasis on the word stage. The statute doesn't define what proceedings are, but the phrase all stages of the proceedings appears only in one place in a revised code. And in that context, it is modified.
Why is there any proceeding before the child is actually charged? What is the proceeding before a child is charged?
Well, what the statute says is all stages of the proceeding as defined in Chapter 2151 or 2152. The simple way to do that is say, is something in 2151 or 2152? Interrogation is available, as it were, in 2151.311. Therefore, it's identified as a piece of the puzzle. So a stage of the proceedings is not limited to court proceedings. Later in the statute, in the seventh and eighth sentences, the legislature used the word hearing. And if the legislature intended this broad language to be narrowly defined, it could have very easily used the word that it used later in the statute, hearing. And if the legislature wanted to narrow this in the way that it is done in the juvenile rules, it could have defined the right to counsel as only extending to court proceedings. That it did not do. So my contention is that it is there. It does exist in Ohio law. If this court embraces the broad language that was enacted in 1969, again, at the same time the right to counsel in custody was first recognized. I mean, that was a change, right? Because Before that time, the right to counsel was provided only for, quote, hearings and cases, and that was soon after Galt. In 1969, again, the first time the rights while in custody were addressed, the words changed from hearings and cases to all stages of the proceedings. I can't imagine it being wider than hearings and cases unless there was something else intended.
Counsel, was this juvenile in custody at this interrogation?
Yes. Okay. And we know that in part because he was Mirandized.
Yes, he was Mirandized, which suggests that it was a stage towards or activity. Let's call it activity towards the charge.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. No question. I want to address Watson because this court addressed in Ray Watson this idea of whether Miranda requires an interested adult independent advice standard. And remember, Watson addressed Miranda. This case is different. This case addresses whether the right to counsel, this broad right to counsel, stretches back to interrogation by statute. So in Watson, this court specifically declined to undertake to impose a new standard. But again, that was in a constitutional Miranda-type setting. So one question is, why did this broad interpretation sort of lay dormant for so long? And I think it's because it wasn't until this court addressed this fifth sentence of 2151.352 that we really, as a state, recognized what the parental role in guiding a child with this very serious decision to waive counsel in court proceedings was. So we didn't really fully understand the parental role until CS. Ohio has recognized that a child needs special guidance in the very adversarial setting that is court. But isn't interrogation even more adversarial? Why then would Ohio prohibit a child from waiving counsel alone in court, but permit a child to waive counsel at a very important point in this journey towards
conviction? Would you have this right attach only if they're in custody with a Miranda warning? Or do you take it back further to where they, questioning them on the street and asking them questions in the police cruiser or before they do any Mirandizing, they're just investigating? At what point do you attach this right?
Well, I think it's a logical point to start, but it's also the point that is addressed in the statute. And remember, the statute provides for all counsel at all stages of the proceedings under this chapter 2152.
But I'm
walking
asking
around on the street isn't in the chapters. So that's it's a natural place to stop, but it's also not... There's nothing in the 2151 or 2152 that allow a police officer to talk to a kid on the street. So it wouldn't be extended naturally, logically, or by statute. So in Galt, the court considered whether to extend the Fifth Amendment right to against child self-incrimination to children. So it had been already been extended to adults through Miranda. And so Galt addressed this interrogation quite extensively. And the court considered the point of view then of the Arizona Supreme Court. And the Arizona Supreme Court noted that it preferred that children assume an attitude of trust and confidence through the toward the officials of the juvenile process because confession is good for a child and aids in rehabilitation. But the court in Galt in 1967 noted that even then, evidence was accumulating that showed that confession doesn't aid rehabilitation, rather that the perception of fairness is what aids rehabilitation. And so the court noted where children are induced to confess by paternal urgings, and then the confession is followed by disciplinary action, they feel like the process is unfair, and that doesn't foster rehabilitation.
Counsel, in taking a look at the statute, 2151.352. It starts out with legal counsel at all stages of the proceedings under this chapter, and then it goes on in further explaining what happens if you don't have counsel. But it's always if a party appears without the court shall. Well, the court's not in the police officer's interrogation room or the school principal's, ante room or wherever the child's being questioned. So what you're arguing that this statute means at a stage of the proceeding to be the interrogation when the rest of the statute just directs what the court shall do?
Well, it's not the rest of the statute, but you're correct. And that is, you know, frankly, that's a problem. The fifth sentence itself, however, does not use the word court. The fifth sentence doesn't contain those words. However, so there are two things. One is the intention of the statute is to provide the fullest level of protection, right? And that makes sense because children are vulnerable. There's another way to get there, though, without saying this is pure statutory construction. In Watson, this court set forth the totality of the circumstances test, where the court, as you said, looks back and determines whether a confession is voluntary and a waiver is knowing. And in that totality of the circumstances test, as the totality of the circumstances test that was addressed in CS by this court, the parental role and the advice given by parent becomes a condition precedent to that child's waiving counsel. That's what this court did in CS. It made that a condition precedent. That is to say, if the parent hasn't given advice about the child's decision to waive counsel, as CS's mother wasn't able to do, stop right there. Child must have counsel. So that's what I'm suggesting, either through the statute, and I think it would be fair for this court to apply those words in this context because the word court isn't in that sentence. Likewise, it would be fair to create that condition precedent as it did in CS. Children are easily coerced. They're easy victims of the law in an interrogation setting. And giving the right to counsel statute life in this interrogation context ensures that children are protected at the very earliest stage of the proceedings.
Would we not just send it back to the, you know, to the legislature or issue an opinion that would ask the legislature to take a look at this? Because as Justice Stratton brought out, this is policy. They've reduced policy to statute already, why don't we just say they need to expand it if that, in fact, is the direction they want to go?
Well, I asked this court not to do that, and for an important reason.
Give me a good reason.
The good reason is because the words are there. The words are plain, and the committee notes at the time that in 1969, when the statute was passed, again, broadened the language from hearings and cases to all stages of the proceedings. I think it would be easy for this court to note that intent, to note the plain words. The plain words certainly don't prevent it. They can be included. Second reason, in light of JDB especially, but this now we have decades of United States Supreme Court precedent that have created a different constitutional hook, I believe. And that is that children deserve special protections. They need special protections. Categorically, they're unable to assert their rights and in the same way adults can. So I think we've entered into a new day where this may be constitutionally required very quickly. So this is an early opportunity for this court to take that step according to the statute. Now I want to talk about Gallegos v. Colorado for a second. And in that case, the court, this was from 1962, obviously before Galt, before Miranda, the court noted that a lawyer or an adult friend could have afforded 14-year-old Gallegos the protection which his own immaturity could not. And I stand here today saying that in Ohio, this protection is mandated at all stages of the proceedings. And
How does the child get a lawyer at the proceeding stage, in your view? We normally begin or commencement of proceedings with some type of complaint or arraignment, and then we know they've started, and that's when we would normally find counsel being appointed by a member of the court. But you're asking for something much, much different. So how does that litigant get counsel?
The child gets counsel by saying during the Miranda proceedings, I want counsel. How it would change under this application, the extension, the natural extension of CS.
Well, you said the Miranda rights were provided here.
Right. So what?
There was no request for counsel.
What should have happened?
So you're arguing against yourself, actually, if I understand what you just said.
I'm not. What I'm suggesting is that a child cannot waive without consultation of parent. So a child cannot proceed through Miranda.
So you want a rule that says every time a child is transported to a police facility, parents are to be summoned? or what are you asking
us
to
do? Must be available to provide child counsel. Now, if parents can't get there, attorney can provide the counsel about the decision whether he should waive Miranda.
That really isn't what the statute calls for, though.
The statute provides for counsel at all stages of the proceedings, and the fifth sentence, as this court noted in CS, provides that a child may not waive unless he's given an opportunity to be advised about his decision to waive. So in court, children aren't allowed to waive alone without that advice. Why then should they be able to waive without that advice through Miranda? That's it. It's that easy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Vann? You've used your time. Mr. Vann?
Thank you. Good morning. Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. My name is Daniel Vann. I'm an assistant prosecutor for Cuyahoga County, representing the state of Ohio in this case. Before I get to the bulk of my argument, there is one discrepancy in the record I'd like to correct or address. On page 2 of my merit brief, around paragraph 2, I noted that M.W. had, there's some indication of autism in about 10 prior adjudications for delinquent. Looking closer at the record, there appears to be two identical transcripts from the same proceeding, the second of which indicates that they were really talking about the co-delinquent in this case. But those particular facts, I don't believe, are really essential to the...
So what's your point, that he didn't have prior adjudications?
He did, Your Honor. There were approximately about 4 prior adjudications, and we do know from the record at the time of this offense, M.W. was on probation for another offense. But, yes, there were prior delinquencies in this case. The issue in this case is whether or not the General Assembly designated custodial interrogation as a stage of the proceedings. The state submits that the General Assembly did not designate custodial interrogation as a stage of the proceedings. Therefore, subject to constitutional provisions, a juvenile may knowingly and voluntarily waive his or her Miranda rights.
And Mr. Vann, could you address the comment that opposing counsel made regarding paragraph 5 of In Re CS? I think she said that that was a situation where the court said a juvenile could not waive the Miranda rights without counsel or a parent. That's not how I read CS, but would you...
Yes, Your Honor. In Re CS dealt with the case that was actually in the delinquency proceeding stages. In that case, there was discussions between the judge, the parent, and child. It was some of a quick discussion about waiver of rights. Ultimately, this court held that in the juvenile court proceedings, that right to counsel, that Sixth Amendment right to counsel that's in line with N. Ray Gault, cannot be waived unless the child first consults, has meaningful discussion with an adult, a parent, or an attorney.
And we did talk about totality of the circumstances, did we not?
Yes, waiver in other circumstances. Usually waiver, we evaluate waiver under Ohio law, under a totality of the circumstances.
We've had constitutional protections evolve, particularly in the area of mental disabilities and retardation and the Adkins test now for death penalty cases. It seems to me I'll do the flip side of the question I asked your opposing counsel. It seems to me the social science is very, very strong that children are easily led, don't understand these rights. Having had 15-year-olds myself, I can certainly attest to that. Is it time for us to look at the Constitution and determine that there should be constitutional protections because the science now tells us that this is a false assumption, that these children are able to make these rational decisions and really knowingly waive Miranda rights?
Your Honor, the state of Ohio is not necessarily opposed to any change of the law. As Your Honor had earlier stated, that this is a policy question. This case is in on the statutory interpretation of what that phrase, stage of the proceedings, means. Part of argument presented by appellant was that we have multiple states which have enacted these greater protections for juveniles, and almost every single state which has done so has done so explicitly. West Virginia, for example, was one of the statutes. One provision of their statute says juveniles are entitled to counsel at all stages of the proceedings, or something very similar to that. But in the same statute and another provision, there's a rule which indicates if the juvenile is under 14, then any statement made in a custodial interrogation is not valid unless an attorney is present. If the child is at least 14 but less than 16, the rule in West Virginia is that it can be made without the attorney. The parent has to be present, and there has to be a valid waiver. And in West Virginia, there's no indication that there's preventing a 17-year-old from making that Miranda waiver. But going back to my argument why the General Assembly has not designated a custodial interrogation as a stage of the proceedings, I think it's most evident through the 2002-2005 amendments. When looking at the legislative, the LSC notes for both those amendments, 2002 notes indicates that this act makes clear that certain continuing provisions of the Juvenile Code also apply to the new RC 2152. The provisions so expanded include provisions relating, it goes on, to the right to legal counsel in juvenile court proceedings. There's almost identical, similar language in the 2005 LSC notes, giving a nod that 2151.352 is really discussing juvenile court proceedings. And next, when we turn to this construction of the statute itself, 2151.352, we're dealing with the entire first paragraph. The first sentence of the paragraph indicates that the right to legal counsel in all stages of proceedings belongs to a child, a parent, or a custodian. These are all different types of parties to proceedings that occur in juvenile court, be it a delinquency proceeding, abuse, neglect proceedings, and so forth. The remaining sentences, as noted by Chief Justice O'Connor, is that we're talking about court actions. If the party appears to be indigent, then the court shall appoint counsel, or the court shall stay the proceedings until counsel can be appointed. That's all in the same paragraph. So looking at that entire paragraph, there's a clear view in my mind that the General Assembly is really talking about court proceedings.
Well, counsel, at the very least, why wouldn't it make sense that before a child is interrogated, there's an attempt to notify the parent to get that parent to the place of interrogation, or at least have the child talk to the parent over the telephone, or some communication with what may amount to a minimal amount of counseling?
Correct, Your Honor. That could be done, and actually there's some indication in the record that this was done in this case, and one of the preliminary hearings, there was a line of questioning ultimately objected to, but there was the question, was the parent contacted? I believe the detective indicated that he contacted the mother. There was an objection, and that line of questioning stopped at that point. But we do have an indication that that MW's mother was contacted during this.
Well, in Ray CS, we talk about the parent or a lawyer for the child. And, does it make sense in these circumstances, the interrogation, what would be the prohibition against having, a parent contacted and able to talk with the potential defendant at the time?
I don't believe that there is a prohibition prohibiting communication with a parent. I believe some of the statutes provide that when a juvenile is taken in custody, that the juvenile will be timely allowed to communicate with an attorney or a parent. But this is the issue in this case is whether
this is before custody. Before charging or taking to the detention center, etc. This is interrogation.
Correct, Your Honor. I don't believe. know of any prohibition that would prohibit that, but the state's position is that at least the way the statute is worded right now, that that's not a prerequisite to having a valid waiver of that right against self-incrimination.
Is the state's view that police should be interrogating juveniles without their parents present or contacted?
No, that's not the state's view in this.
Well, as I read the statute, it says counsel must be provided for a child not represented by the child's parent. It says guardian or custodian. So at what point should the parent be brought into the proceeding?
Well, we know for sure that once the delinquency proceedings begin, that you know, the parent has to be involved.
Your view is on the filing of a complaint or an indictment, for example. Is that your view?
No, Your Honor. I there's no prohibition against allowing.
I'm trying to get you to tell us what the state's view is on when a parent should be brought into a situation, as we have here with a 15-year-old child.
I guess, again, the parent, I think the parent can be involved in the custodial interrogation stage.
Should the police have a duty to contact the parent before questioning?
I believe so. I'm not sure if that's required by statute, but that is what had happened in this case, from my understanding of the facts.
Does the record reflect what the parent response was?
Doesn't fully reflect what the parent's response was, again, because that line of questioning was objected to at that time that question arose.
If we approach this on a constitutional basis, does that open the analysis to immigrants or those who don't speak English or those who lack education and potentially get us into another realm as factors to consider in when we provide counsel?
I think once we look at any sort of constitutional waiver of Miranda, we are looking at different factors, totality of circumstances. We know for juveniles, we do consider the age, whether or not the parent is present can be a factor in that totality of circumstance analysis. Determining whether or not the juvenile's right to waiver is knowing and voluntarily made.
Thank you.
Mr. Van, the juvenile proceedings are informal in nature compared with adult court. I'm wondering what function is left for the attorney or the parent to serve in assisting the child in juvenile court if the child is already without assistance of counsel or parent, waive Miranda rights, and confessed.
I think the attorney's role in that case is to proceed whether or not with consulting with the juvenile, where to proceed to proceed with the hearing, or whether or not to admit to the charges against the juvenile, and so forth. There's
essentially the attorney and the parent are going to be there as mitigation advocates at that point.
Or the attorney themselves can act, looking at the facts of the case, determine whether or not, make an argument whether or not those Miranda waiver was valid. Just because there is a confession doesn't mean necessarily that the juvenile is stuck. There's still things that the attorney can do in juvenile court as an advocate to advocate on behalf of the juvenile.
Well, the first hurdle is making sure that the waiver is knowing and voluntary. And as Justice Stratton said, there's all sorts of literature in the social sciences that would indicate that children develop at very different rates at different times chronologically, and there is a wide-held scientific belief that a child's capacity to act and then realize the consequences of those acts is not in line with an adult, and that they will make statements against their interest unknowingly or without appreciation of the consequences. So given the gold standard of being knowing and intelligently or knowing and voluntarily waiving, and coupling that with what we know about the development or lack thereof of a child, why couldn't we read this statute in a manner that would allow for at least the consultation on whether or not to waive your Miranda rights with a parent or an interested adult, namely an attorney?
Because this matter is about what the word stage of the proceedings means, the only evidence of what they call evidence that custodial interrogation is a stage of the proceedings is 2151.311, which was originally enacted at the same time as 2151.352 in 1969. At that time, that 311 statute did not include custodial interrogation as part of that processing purposes. That statute is about where, how, and what manner a juvenile may be held for processing purposes in terms of before taking certain actions. That stage, that custodial interrogation was not included until 1996. Merely because it appears in that statute does not mean that the General Assembly specifically designated custodial interrogation as a stage of the proceedings. And I would also add that if we look to Juvenile Rule 4, that juvenile rule makes clear that the right to counsel for parents, juveniles, does not begin until they become parties to the juvenile court proceedings.
But the constitutional right to be Mirandized attaches upon interrogation. And you're saying the constitutional right to counsel doesn't.
The constitutional right to counsel under the Sixth Amendment would commence when the complaint is filed. Of course, there is the Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination, along with it the right to counsel that does attach with the custodial interrogation. 2151.352 is just a reflection that the General Assembly intended to bring the rights in line with In re Gault, which is a Sixth Amendment right to counsel during juvenile court proceedings.
The whole question is, do you need to have an attorney or a parent help the child decide whether to have an attorney for the future or for the questioning?
As far as the constitutional analysis goes, there's no constitutional requirement that the parent must consult with the juvenile before waiving those Miranda rights. Of course, we do recognize that 10 other states or 10 or so states have enacted specific legislation clearly indicating in what circumstances that custodial interrogation statement can be admitted and what circumstances which that juvenile can waive that right. And those statutes are usually age-specific.
Thank you.
So I understand that we're talking in a general sense here about a rule that applied generally, not just in this case, but there is some indication in this case that this was not the first time this individual had been before the juvenile court or in the system. In fact, I think the brief indicates the judge noted it was at least 10 delinquent cases. So if we're talking about totality of the circumstances, it would be hard to find that this individual perhaps did not understand what was going on. Would that be a fair statement?
Correct, but very, very briefly, part of that 10-time delinquency was part of that
five times?
You know, conflicting information, but there was something like four other delinquencies.
That was the part that you corrected. All right. Thank you.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. For rebuttal, you've used your time. Who will be arguing?
If I may yield time. Thank
all right. Ms. Siraton?
Thank you. Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor. May it please the Court. My name is Nadia Siraton. I'm with the National Juvenile Defender Center, and I represent Amici Curiae.
Would you speak into the microphone? I can't hear you, please.
Is that better? Unlike counsel for appellant, who asserts that, as in Gallegos, a lawyer or adult friend can afford a child the protection that his own immaturity cannot, amici take the position that only counsel can fill the role of giving meaningful advice to a child about the decision to proceed with or without an attorney in an interrogation, as only an attorney has the necessary skill and training to effectively protect individuals at that stage of the proceeding. The state wants this court to apply an adult standard to children, but as the United States Supreme Court most recently reiterated in JDB, our history is replete with law and judicial recognition that children cannot be viewed simply as miniature adults. Children are different and require special protections. These protections are especially important during an interrogation, as recognized by the court in Galt, to ensure that confessions are truly voluntary in that not only are they not coerced or suggested, but also that they are not the product of ignorance of rights or of adolescent fantasy, fright, or despair. Amici urges the court to establish a bright-line rule that children have a right to meaningful consultation with an attorney during police interrogation and prior to any waiver of their rights under Miranda.
A counsel, the judge can look at totality of the circumstances in light of what you've just said.
Your Honor, we are suggesting that this is actually, we have to look at this before it even gets to that evaluation. We need to think about the fact that at the stage that a child is faced with an interrogation by the police, an adversary that is difficult for a youth to deal with because it is an authority figure, and that we know that youth often will comply with authority figures, will try to do what they believe is wanted. And so the fact that they are in this situation with law enforcement and discussions that have come out, as in JDB, indicate that this does carry a great amount of stress for a child and is something that needs to be considered even beyond that at this early stage.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decision. Thank you very much.